Peter Hill Explains, where I invite you to join the science teaching conversation with me about
New Scientist, 21st, 28th of December, a double issue, I suppose. Still, $10 in Australia. That's ridiculously expensive. However, they have the editor there, and of course the thing first attracts my attention is News 6, the time travel paradox. A finite number of parallel histories solves the classic problem. Look, I think that's complete bogus, because there's no paradox in general relativity. Obviously special relativity can only do so much. So, but I'm prepared to be enlightened. They might know something I don't know. I may have to go back and revisit my general relativity to explain this all. Doctor Strange searches alternative timeline. Paradox-free time travel. There may be a way to alter the past without breaking the future. Now that is interesting. Now that's different from the twin paradox. Would-be time travellers have long wrestled with the grandfather paradox. If you change things in the past, prevent yourself ever existing, how did you time travel in the first place? In other words, if Alice goes back some time and kills her grandfather Bob, she won't have been born and can't carry out the murderous plot. One way to avoid this idea of branching universe is the idea of branching universes, in which the universe splits into two, with each instance of time leading to an infinite number of copies of parallel universes that evolve differently over time. Or you could say this is impossible, and then there's causality and speed of light and all our modern physics. But physicists would prefer to avoid the infinite if possible. But now, Barak Shosky and Joe Hauser of the Perimeter Institute in Canada have come up with a model of time travel that merely requires a very large, rather than infinite, number of parallel histories in order to avoid paradoxes. The pair suggests that travel between these timelines, a person could step through a wormhole, essentially a hole in space-time, that they say is mathematically possible. One way to think of the universe is a set of points in space-time with a timeline or history of events, a mathematical function that borders these points. This is Shoshani. In the branching universe and parallel universe ideas, you expand the number of points to create multiple sets and thus mathematically distinct universes. But Shoshani and Hauser have modified a third idea called parallel histories. Quote, there are different parallel universes where things are roughly the same, and each one is mathematically on a separate space-time manifold. You can go between those manifolds when you travel back in time, says Shoshani. This really is sort of a wank fest if I've ever come across it. Held within one universe, or just one set of points, are multiple timelines represented by mathematical functions. Rearranging those points, reversing wormhole alters that function. This means Alice can travel back in time to timeline 2, where she attempts to kill Bob by releasing a crocodile. If the crocodile doesn't kill him, he can go on to have grandchildren, and Alice too can try a game. She travels to timeline 3 and tries to drop a piano on Bob. 2 is that the Alices can change their actions so they aren't locked to Alice's one failing plan. If she was to travel within a single timeline, she would have to repeat the act, because that was the only way to keep the history constant. Okay. And eliminate the possibility of the paradox. It may seem a bit of a cheat to add multiple timelines, but Shosky and Hauser have calculated that this paradox-free time travel can be achieved with a finite number of histories in one universe. Alice is made of a finite number of particles that can only be in a finite but incredibly large number of arrangements, he says. There's one big flaw in the pairs model as it stands. It only works with one dimension of space, rather than the usual dimension 3, says Grant Lewis at the University of Sydney. Shoshini says he plans to translate the model to 3 dimensions to better represent the real world. Still, it isn't as satisfying as Lewis's would like. What time travel means here is stepping between those histories. That's even freakier, he says. At some level, it doesn't even feel like time travel anymore, because what's the point of going back and killing Hitler if the Second World War still plays out in the universe you're from? I couldn't agree more. Like, you can go back and do something, but it's completely pointless because you are tracking yourself onto another universe. So you don't get to... Oh, it's just ridiculous. I'm sorry. Here's another thing. Tiny folded DNA machines may boost antibacterials. I do like the idea of folding DNA machines. It's great. Origami can be deadly when made of DNA. Tiny devices created from intricate folded DNA strands can boost the potency of antibacterial chemicals by increasing their contacts with microbes. When tested on 2 common kinds of bacteria, folded DNA slowed their growth rate. Iona Melder, University of Cambridge, says a similar approach could be directed against any kind of microbe. It's a proof of principle. This is proof of principle. DNA is best known for sorting out genetic information, but it can also be folded in 3D structures called DNA origami. I like that. Well, I think you should also say proton origami. Additionally, small lengths of DNA can be designed to have the exact shape needed to bind with biological molecules like a key fitting log. Miller's team combined these two functions to create a flat platform of DNA with 5 wells, each loaded with 2 molecules of lysozyme, an antibacterial compound found in body fluids such as tears. That would be interesting. Lyso, L-Y-S-O-Z-Y-M-E. I'll have to see if I can remember that. Sticking out from the edges of the platform are short lengths of DNA designed to bind with E. coli and Strobilus bacteria. The idea is the platform's locks bacteria hold them closer to the lysosome, increasing their potency. Sure enough, when the bacteria are exposed to the platforms, they grew more slowly than when exposed to antibacterial compound alone. Ooh, that's a bit, a bit complex, isn't it? Using the approach, an antibiotic drug would allow lower doses to be given, reducing the side effects of the individual and slowing the rise of antibiotic resistance in general. I've just got huge amounts of doubts on this study. One potential flaw of the method is that unless the DNA structures are modified to make them more stable, enzymes in the blood tend to break them down. It is Tenfield at the University of at Ludwig Maximilian University in Munich, Germany. I would definitely say so. I wonder how they get these people. So there is a form of peer review, but it's sort of lurking in the background here. Climate summer failure. That's depressing. Let's read this. Planes to fly close together to cut fuel. The aviation industry is planning to test whether mimicking the way birds fly in formation can reduce the fuel use and in an effort to cut emissions. Plane manufacturers Airbus will run 2 demonstrative flights in the first half of next year. The idea is inspired by a V formation that geese migrate in. This is for one plane to take off soon after another, following close precisely enough to take advantage of the air vortex produced by the first plane's weight. It will cut the fuel use from 5 to 10% per trip, says Airbus. Initial tests go well. The firm will then try the technique with real passenger airplanes, allowing the Airbus to demonstrate flights. Suzanne Bohor, chef at Airbus, with tests planned in 2021. The technique could be used on normal flights in 2025. What would be really good is if you get a 10% fuel efficiency. That would be great, because a lot of the time is that you are paying for that last 100 litres of fuel that you're using. It doesn't come from London, it comes from all the way from Australia. if you can reduce that to, so you could sort of go up and get international flights, that would be a big question. And then, of course, it's not more fuel efficient to get a bigger plane. So, if you double the size of the plane, you may increase fuel consumption by 180%, but that's a 10% fuel advantage. And we have to demonstrate safe operation. We have to demonstrate that we can find a spot where passengers' comfort is not affected, because we basically want to benefit from the updraft of the vortex. She doesn't expect takeoffs to be more turbulent, but she says it's possible fuel savings may be not as great as hoped. Well, that's obviously... she probably knows something. Let's read this. Toad rediscovered now. It's a heck of an ugly toad. It's a black and white toad. It looks disgusting. The starry night halcyon toad has been documented by biologists for the first time since 1991 in Colombia. But unlike other stories of rediscovered species, this one was never really lost. The local... "We've shared our home with the iguana for thousands of years," said Roberto Chaparro, whatever his name, who represents the community of Sogrom. This is, it's undoubtedly, that's something not to be very proud of, I suppose. It's like saying, you know, I like bronze because my great relatives used bronze in the Bronze Age. It's almost meaningless. Conservation groups, Fundacon Etapolis, spent years building trust between the biologists and the Sogrom community in Sierra Nevada, the Santa Maria Mountains. Eventually, Ahura people agreed to show them the toad in the wild. The starry night toad was considered potentially extinct, but the team documented a population of around 30 individuals. Turkey gets a military drone with a gun. Good God, Donald Trump, what the fuck are you doing? A drone with a machine gun attached to it can hit targets at high precision, according to its makers. Turkey is set to become the first country to have a drone when it gets delivery this month. Oh my God, where's it been delivered from? The 25-kilogram aircraft has 8 rotating blades for flight. This machine gun carries 200 rounds of ammunition and can fire a single shot or 15-round bursts. Oh my God. Many countries and groups already use small military drones that can drop grenades or fly to a target to detonate an explosive. The new drone, called Songar, is made by Ankara-based electronics firm Asigard. Is the first to use a secret firearm to be ready for service. Turkey expects the drones to be delivered before the end of the year. Oh, God. I think... helicopters, where they have the radar, which goes above the horizon, so they're... and they just shoot you. It's like shooting you from space. I don't know. It's hard for the drone to shoot accurately, partly because of the difficulty of judging the range and angle, and partly because the recoil of each shot significantly moves the drone, affecting the aim of the next round. Sogar has two systems to overcome these challenges. One uses sensors to calculate the distance, angle, and wind speed, and work out where to aim. The second has a set of robot arms that move the gun and compensate for the effect of the recoil. Oh, God, Father. Asgard claims Songa has the accuracy that corresponds to hitting a 15-centimeter area from 200 meters. That is sufficient for every bullet to hit a human-sized target at that range. A human drone pilot picks the target by putting a crosshair on it and using a screen to remote control. Well, my only point is that if something is really accurate, you know, why not just have a sniper rifle? Greater range, greater distance, single shot. Among multiple things, I think this is just bizarre. Songa can also operate in groups. Oh my God. Ahan Songa and Asgard So a swarm of three drones can be flown using a single remote control, with all three firing at the target simultaneously. Drones are extremely hard to stop. They're concerned that the technology will be easy for others to copy, says Robert Buckner at the US Army Strategic Studies Institute in Pennsylvania. Tango may also open up new uses for drones, says Bonker. For example, machine gun drones could lay down suppressive fire to keep defenders' head down while other drones attack more substantial targets, he says. Turkish military currently patrols the nation's border with Syria. In October, Turkey launched a military action including airstrikes on border terms, resulting in displacement of hundreds of thousands of people, as well as reports of human rights violations. Sort of tell me more. Now let's read. Okay, we're on the train. Mouse mouth restored with anti-aging drugs. A transplant drug with anti-aging properties has been shown to rejuvenate the oral health of old mice. The drug called rapamycin regenerated the bone in which the teeth are embedded, restored the mouth microbiome to a useful state and reduced inflammation. Now I've got poor mouse. It's the first time any treatment has been shown. Now I've just got to remember, it's the antibacterial thing I want to remember. Like, so I've got to read that. We could actually see spots where the new bone was growing around the teeth. Two-thirds of the elderly people have gum disease with no existing treatment reverses the process, says Cashel Berlin. What's more, gum disease is linked to a higher risk of other conditions, including dementia, diabetes and heart disease. Some researchers think gum disease may cause Alzheimer's disease, as a New Scientist reported earlier this year. Thank you, New Scientist. This suggests that restoring oral health could be a much wider benefit. It's clear to me that this could be immensely important. Well, you're doing the research, aren't you? Bucko. But it isn't clear that rapamycin has the same effect in humans. Obviously, if I have, well, let's see what they have to say. Even if it does, the drug can have many undesirable side effects. It suppresses the immune system, in which is why its main use is preventing transplanted organisms from being rejected. Rapamycin has also attracted interest for its anti-aging effects. It can extend the lives of several animals, including mice and fruit flies, by around 10%. Aberlin started looking at its effect on the mouth when Jonathan Ahn, who had previously studied dentistry, joined his team. Researchers found that mice given rapamycin all their lives had more bone around their teeth. So they gave mice aged 20 months elderly in mouse terms food with added rapamycin for 8 weeks and compared the oral teeth with the mice who were not given the drug. Teams saw the bone growth in mouse's mouth, as well as decline in disease-associated bacteria that become more common with older mice. These include Prothomonas gingivitis, which is suspected to cause Alzheimer's. The findings are fascinating, says Joho Pedro Macaulay's University of Liverpool, UK. Quote, the big question is whether it could have the same effect on people, he says. As we think you said before, didn't you? Several groups are creating variants of rapamycin that are designed to minimize undesirable effects, and some are being trialled in people. It is possible that the drugs will have the same benefits for oral health as we've seen in mouth. Capitalin is carrying out. This is a drug you're giving to transplant patients, so they've got to have it all their life. You've got to suddenly take a lot more. Surely you could say, this is stunningly bad science. My godfather. Kevlin is carrying out another mouse study designed to reveal if applying rapamycin to just the mouth rather than the entire body has the same effect. He hopes to run a trial on people. How does it work? That's a good double blind, isn't it? Using a lower dose than given to people with transplanted organs might minimize the side effects, he says. He doesn't plan to study those already on the drug. People needing transplants are seriously ill and are given many different drugs, so there are too many confounding factors, he says. Whoa. Oh, I just think it's mad, quite honestly. Okay, art hints that ancient Greeks travelled far. That's interesting. Bronze Age painting on Greek island shows a monkey from 1,000 kilometres away in Asia. The finding suggests that ancient cultures separated by great distances were trading and exchanged ideas. The artwork is one of several wall paintings in the building of Akrotiri, a Greek island of Santorini in the Aegean Sea. Akrotiri was a settlement of the Myrian civilization in the Bronze Age Greece that was buried in ash from volcanic eruptions around 1600 BC. Many of the paintings show monkeys, yet there were none in Greece at the time. Most species are found in ancient Egypt, like the olive baboons. This makes sense, as Egypt was in contact with the Myrian civilization, which was spread across the Aegean islands. However, others were harder to identify. Marie-Nicole Pager at the University of Pennsylvania in Philadelphia teamed up with primatologists to re-examine the mystery monkey paintings. One stood up. When they looked at the wall painting, they all straight away unambiguously said, "That's a langur," says Pager. The team was identified a monkey that has a grey langur. As well as its distinctive fur, the monkey was depicted holding its tail in a characteristic S shape. Grey langurs live in southern Asia in what's now Nepal, Bhutan, and India. Okay, I'll take that. You were saying Russia is actually part of Asia, which I think is sensible to say. The artist who painted the picture must somehow have seen a langur. Or you think, did Mary Greeks visit Leonidas? Quote, I'd be surprised if someday in the future we found evidence of a kind of direct contact, said Bajir. But right now, there's none. So it's possible to visit, and it was the other way around, but again, there's no evidence. Instead, it may be that the two civilizations were connected by Mesopotamia. Another Bronze Age civilization centered now in Iraq. Langurs may have been imported to Mesopotamia from the menageries that were visiting Greeks saw them. It's interesting that the kings had menageries and that the royal menagerie, you know, royals used to keep pets as part of their divine power, I suppose. The menagerie at Versailles became the French Zoological Gardens with the stuff. And that, well, of course, they had the medieval thing of staging fights between, you know, animals with there was still very much a mystical belief, even though you've got Christianity, mystical belief in animals, which is, you know, I don't think the Romans even had that. So let's see, 23 minutes, let's read another paper. I must admit, that time travel thing was just the most vomit bait, I'd call it. Okay. Urban design. Well, how to make cities pedestrian friendly and reduce car use. I think the fundamental thing is, if we expect people to get less done in a day, they can spend more time walking about. Street layouts have major influence on people's decisions to drive or travel by foot, according to the first global analysis of street connectivity. This is by Alice Klein. The findings could be used by urban planners to design cities with lower climate impacts, quote unquote. Christopher Barrington Lee of McGill University in Canada and Adam Millard Bowell at the University of California, Santa Cruz assess the connectivity of street networks in different cities. They tallied the number of intersections, streets radiating from each intersection, dead end loops, and measured the straightness and routes between each intersection. Which was done for all 46 million kilometres of the world's mapped roads. The results shows that cities with grid street patterns like Buenos Aires, Osaka, Alexandria, Taipei, have the best connectivity. Old European cities like Paris and Vienna also score well, despite the intersections tending to be regularly spaced in three-way instead of four-way, because those still form tightly connected work groups. At the other end of the spectrum, cities that favour cul-de-sacs and crescents, like Bangkok, Raleigh in North Carolina, Manchester in the UK, are the least well-connected because their curvy dead-end streets create disjointed suburban islands. Since well-connected streets make it easier to walk, cycle and access public transport, cities with such streets tend to have lower rates of car ownership and a higher proportion of people walking to work. This suggests that how we design, and this is interesting because when you're laying down a new suburb, it's all cul-de-sacs or car combing. They want to car comb, but they mean that you have to have cars. Design open spaces now will have long-lasting impacts on the use of cars and the greenhouse gas emissions, because once streets are laid down, they are essentially locked in, says Barrington Lee. The choice about street connectivity in new developments is one of the largest climate-relevant investments that humankind is making, and yet it's been grossly overlooked. Until we get rid of it and get electric cars, the U.S. prioritising street connectivity in new developments that would reduce car emissions by 2050 by 9%, Barrington Lee, says Barrington Lee. The impacts are likely to be even bigger in places like China and India, where entire cities are being constructed from scratch, he says. Overall, the amount of urban space in the world is set to triple between 20,000 and 2030. Well-connected, we're almost there, aren't we? Why don't you actually say, and we are at 2020, we are at the such and such percentage. You put a fact out there. Well-connected streets may also cut carbon emissions by making it easier for people to share resources, says Barrington Lee. In contrast, if you live in a cul-de-sac, hell in the suburbs, it's hard to get anywhere, so you might have a swimming pool in your backyard instead of going to the local pool. Or home theater in your basement instead of going to the cinema. Because you can't go shopping so often. Oh, yes, it might be in America. Street goods are populated because they enabled efficient transport of people and goods. Cul-de-sacs caught on in the 20th century in the US and UK when cars enabled people to spread out. Street run over to your neighbours, says Barrington Lee. But research shows that people are actually more likely to run over and killed in cul-de-sacs than on gridded streets, possibly because pedestrians are less cautious and less visible to drivers. Okay, let's read this one and then we'll finish up. Google breaks quantum chemistry simulation record. The biggest quantum chemistry simulation ever, modeling the behavior of a long chain of hydrogen atoms. Oh, okay. Use qubits, or qubits are that exploits properties of quantum physics to perform calculations. Quantum to simulate quantum, says by Lizu of Virginia Tech, who wasn't involved in the work. I don't know, the lighter molecule simulated by quantum computers is building hydride. Q2B conference in California on the 10th of December, Google's head of quantum algorithms, Ryan Babush, announced his team had simulated a much larger molecule, a chain of 12 hydrogen atoms. Oh, all feasible for me. That's a result that we're pretty excited about, because this is more than double the number of qubits and the number of electrons is any prior quantum chemistry simulation, and had the same level of accuracy. The simulation of large molecules are expected in the near future to use quantum computers. Such molecules are hard to understand using classical computers. The largest we can accurately simulate, we can simulate accurately, is pentosine, which contains 20 and 14 hydrogens. So that. Because even benzene is 6 carbs, 6 hydrogens. That's awful of a bomb. So, that's even triple. Jeez, the second more quantum computer recently to achieve quantum supremacy, the calculus is not possible in ordinary computers, but didn't use all qubits for the simulation, said Babush. Oh my god. Now I'm outside in Australia and the smoke is absolutely killing my eyes at this point in time. I'm like, they're doing the heart attack stuff there. Oh my god, technology is it's pretty interesting. Rodeo ants that ride in the backs of others' ants that found in Texas. That's also interesting. Okay, so I'm going to finish this off and I'm just going to go review it again in my head to see what I've done. How to make cities pedestrian, quantum mechanical stuff. Toad rediscovered. Bad. Greeks did monkeys. Tiny folded DNA could be interesting. There's this a molecule. Paradox of time, free time travel. Just paradox free time travel. And I haven't read the climate failure, but planes are riding close. I'll see how much I can write down. Listening.
Podcast, another story comes to a close. It's been a pleasure sharing this moment in time with you. May you discover truly amazing things, understand them, and tell others. Thanks for listening.